This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing An Unexpected Christmas. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Oh, are you ready
for one dry kiss? I sadly don't know what song you were singing at the top when you were doing the whole ditty. And I was like, what is that? What song is that?
Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way. Don't you tell a single soul what I'm gonna say.
Never heard that one.
Then you didn't watch Unexpected Christmas because they do
karaoke.
Well,
I mean, I saw it in Unexpected Christmas. I saw that. I mean, I haven't heard it before. Okay, get out of here. Okay, that's right. You're on to me. I haven't seen the movie. I'm just going to fudge my way through this whole thing and hope it works out. Who is that? Tyler Hines? Is there a Tyler Hines in this movie?
There's a Tyler Hines in this movie.
Oh, right on. Okay, great, great.
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where during the month of Christmas in August, what? Jing, 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 jing.
We are jingle-lang, jingle-lang.
We are doing An Unexpected Christmas, starring Tyler Hines or Hines. And I am here with my lovely co-host, who I accept as a bestie, even though her Christmas carol knowledge, not the best, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with Corinne, my bestie, who has a plethora of Christmas carols in her arsenal because she grew up in a musical family and need not judge me, Corinne Edding.
Oh, I bet you know all of what? Elvis's lyrics to Blue Christmas, though, and I don't. So there you go.
Oh, well. There is that. And why don't we tell the people in the back, Corinne, why are we doing Christmas in August? Isn't it Christmas in July? Isn't that when most people do their Christmas in the middle of the month?
Because Tamara had a brilliant idea. Why be a lemming following all the other lemmings in the Christmas in July action? Why not be standing like a shining star of Christmas? In August.
And she says lemming in the most loving way.
Yes.
Gentle listeners, if you participate and enjoy Christmas in July, we're just extending the love and the joy and the happiness and the Christmas spirit one more month.
Yeah, and plus, by August, you're pretty tired of all the heat. You've got, like, school coming up, and you're thinking, I need a little hope and joy in my life. Well, ta-da! Mm-hmm. We're bringing it to you in August.
Hope and joy and snowflakes on the TV screen. So you can imagine that you might be cold sometime in the near future as you're sitting in your 115 degree apartment and or house.
Absolutely.
Just melting those ice cubes across your forehead going, oh, yeah, is that man shoveling snow? Oh, God, yes, shovel that snow. Is he salting his driveway? Oh, Lord, are those snowflakes? Yes, yes.
And so you can drink your salted margarita while you're watching somebody salt their driveway. It's kind of perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. So, Tamara, I have to apologize to you.
See, why? For the caroling, right?
No,
for the caroling?
No. This weekend, I had a dream, in it, I just blew up at you. See, here's what was going on.
Oh?
I had written a script. And in the middle of us going back and forth on the script for the show, you were like, now you see here, this is where you need to be putting semicolons. And I'm just going to take a real vulnerable moment right here, right now. I do not know how to use semicolons. And I think that I just felt, you know, a little attacked. And so I was like, semicolons, I don't need semicolons. And yeah, I kind of blew up at you, so I am sorry for blowing up at you about semicolons. It was just my own vulnerability of not really actually knowing how to use semicolons.
Well, first of all, I don't give a fuck about semicolons. And second of all, was this Saturday?
Yes!
Was it Saturday? Because yes! I think my dream self felt your dream self because I just like shot up for no reason. Was like, do I have to pee? No. Is Melody panting and being? No. What? There's a disturbance in the force. I don't know what it is, but
it
something woke me up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was you yelling at my dream self, your dream self yelling at my dream self about semicolons And my dream self is probably like, I don't give a fuck about semicolons. I don't know why you're making all kinds of business about this. Let me go back to sleep. Shit.
Oh, I could have handled it better. That's all I'm saying, you know.
I was going to say, your dream self owes my dream self an apology.
Exactly. 100%.
I cannot even, can't even, exclamation marks, sure. Question marks, absolutely. Semicolons? It's like the bastard stepchild of punctuation.
Like, commas actually can be useful, but like, and I understand that semicolons are useful, but I'm just gonna use a period, thank you. Okay.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever used a semicolon, probably for the same reason you haven't, because I don't know where the fuck they go or how to use them.
Yeah.
Like, there's a dot on top of this comma, something's wrong with, oh, never mind, it's a semicolon.
Well, I'm glad that we can agree to leave the semicolon usage to others that are more capable of semicolons than us.
Did you look that one up in the Dream Dictionary?
Oh, God.
You know, sometimes it has ulterior reasons for dreaming about semicolons. Like, oh, this means you desire a child in the near future.
Oh, my God.
Something ridiculous like that. I'm not saying that's what it is.
Back away.
You need pots and pans in near future. That's what that means in a dream sense.
Oh, how have things been going for you, other than me waking you up with my dream self?
Semicolon! Really good. I was telling Corinne earlier that I'll share with you, gentle listeners, I came home from work, and it was blistering hot, into my apartment, where my lovely man was cooking a pork tenderloin in the oven, and I smelled the deliciousness and then went into the bedroom where I record the podcast, and the air conditioning was on and nobody else was in there. And I was like, why did you put the air conditioning on? You're just wasting electricity. And he looked at me and said, so it's cool in there when you record tonight. And I'm like, oh my God, I love you so much. Oh, and the pork tenderloin was good. Oh, I love you, love you, love you, love you.
That's a good man. Other than finding it questionable that somebody's using the oven when it's ridiculously hot outside, but...
Well, we went to Costco. We have a lot of meat. We have to make it. And I don't know how to use my air fryer in that way yet, and I would not task him to go outside and look in here. Barbecue this. Yeah.
Oh, well, you have a slow cooker, though, too, right?
Yes. That will probably be how we make the next, because we have two packages, mind you, Costco again.
Yeah.
But that's probably what we're going to do with the second batch, because I ate it and I was like, these would make really freaking good carnitas.
Uh-huh.
So thank you, Corinne. Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
You read my mind, just like I felt your dream self. Like, we are in sync. We're simpatico. Get the heck out of here.
There's a reason why we're friends. Semicolon.
There's a reason, semicolon, why we're friends. I don't know what that does to the sentence. What does that even do to the sentence? How does it change it? I don't know. Nobody knows. If you know, gentle listeners, please write into onedrykiss@gmail.com and let us know, because we are completely clueless.
So now that I'm thoroughly jealous of you having delicious foods made for you, which I am also completely supportive and enthusiastic about having happen for you, you want to cool things down by giving us the synopsis for the An Unexpected Christmas?
Well, I don't know if I can cool it down, or maybe you should be prepared to feel the heat.
Oh,
because things are sizzling in An Unexpected Christmas. I'm just kidding. No, it's not.
It's a Hallmark movie. Keep your pants on.
It's a Hallmark movie. I know. They will. They definitely will. It's a Hallmark movie. Synopsis. Deep in the heart of Chicago, two star-crossed lovers live apart. Is it due to trauma, infidelity, or family rejection? No, no, it's due to Jamie's dumbass, played by Tyler Hines, and that's all of Jamie, not just his ass being played by the actor. No, Jamie didn't feel like he was enough for his successful girlfriend, Emily, played by Bethany Joy Lenz, and therefore broke up with her. And shockingly, Jamie neglected to tell his family this one teensy-weensy detail. Breakup? What breakup? And continued under the guise that he and Emily were still together. They live far away. No biggie. What can go wrong?
Ha!
Good Question. At first, the ruse goes snowingly well instead of swimmingly. You see what I did there?
Oh, nice.
The ruse goes snowingly well because when Jamie goes home to spend the holidays with his brood, Emily is at the train station he arrives at. She happens to be in town to pitch a campaign for work and incidentally gets bulldozed like the snow after a storm into Jamie's family's holiday celebration while she continuously urges her ex to come clean about their split. But being around each other has stirred up a little more than holiday cheer between them, and they re-explore their feelings for each other while also dealing with overzealous family members, she sheds, confused waiters, and inflatable unicorn costumes.
Ooh, I'm intrigued.
The Christmas spirit or Santa must have been working behind the scenes to bring these two together, but will they be smart enough to unwrap that gift of love that has been bestowed on them a second time, or will they return to sender? Find out with us as we encounter an unexpected Christmas.
Great job.
I just think you need that jingle, 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 jingle sound you make on your ringtone for your phone, because it's probably going to come up quite a bit in this episode and throughout the whole month, now that I think about it.
I'm so excited.
Well, since you're excited, Crane, do you jingling, want to get us started with an unexpected Christmas?
Why, it would be my pleasure. And we meet Jamie and Emily in An Unexpected Christmas. We're in Chicago, and Jamie is getting ready for his day in his immaculate apartment, pouring coffee into his mug with a J in it and hiding the mug with the E on it. Ooh. He passes by his Balsam Hill TM tree and grabs a Balsam Hill TM ornament.
Oh, God.
Gently.
Is that really a thing? I forgot.
Yes, because Balsam Hill sponsors at least one holiday movie a year with Hallmark. And then they have their, oh, look, here is my Balsam Hill ornament. Let me place it on the tree.
But first I must take it out of my Balsam Hill box that conveniently has Balsam Hill emblazed on the front of it.
Exactly. Perfect. Oh, look at this natural tree that I cut down. Balsam Hill fake tree. TM!
I wonder, so they must have to supply all the ornaments then if they're like being like shopped around like it's Balsam Hill all over the place in Hallmark Town.
Well, and I know in one, it's actually a movie with Paul Campbell in it, where the Balsam Hill advertisement was like stronger than usual, where he was like, here's this Balsam Hill tree and look, ching, the lights, they can change colors, ching, what different ones do you want, ching, and it's like white lights, multicolored, both. And the little kid was like, both. Yeah.
As a little like 1995 for this light set, like popped up on the bottom. And you too can own these wonderful lights from Balsam Hill.
Now, the tree comes with, it comes with the tree.
Oh, uh-huh. Built so in. Sorry.
Yes.
That's probably worth way more than 1995. Then correct. My apologies, Balsam yes. Hill.
TM. Yes. So he takes his, it's actually a cute ornament, Balsam Hill TM ornament, gently placing it on the tree and saying, there you go, little guy. Softly to the ornament. He heads out the door, centered and ready to start his day.
It took me a while because when I saw the J and the E coffee mugs in the cabinet, I'm like, EJ. I wonder what that means.
It means there used to be a couple here and now there's only one.
Yes. I like to try to place Easter eggs in Hallmark movies where there are none. See?
I like it.
Tyler Hines is trying to tell me something. He's trying to tell me something.
He loves you, Tamara. He loves you. Time to say goodbye to Larry. Ty is on his way.
I'm sorry. Today that's not working for me because Larry's got my heart and my stomach forever.
Forever. Forever.
Por vida.
So meanwhile, Emily, her name starts with an E.
That's when it came together after I read your outline. I'm like, oh, okay, there it is. Yeah.
Interesting.
Ding, 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 ding. Just let a Santa sleigh drop right on top of your head, Tamara.
Corinne holds up the cup with the J on it next to a Ty Ty picture, and a cup with an E on it next to a
Bethany Joy Lenz
picture. Da-ding! Back from her One Tree Hill days, which she basically looks essentially the same as from her One Tree Hill days. So good on you, Bethany.
Yeah, she's gorgeous.
Yeah.
She's like, I didn't recognize her from any other Hallmark movies, but I was like, oh, hello, Bethany. Hello. I like your look.
She's been in a few, but
not that I've seen. I know she probably has been, but none that have crossed in my path.
Correct. So Emily is racing around her room, talking to her work bestie, Susie, about the vacation she's going on. Susie encourages her. You've been traveling nonstop for the past year. Maybe you should take some time to stop. And if you're going to go, at least pack something cute in case you meet someone. Winky, winky. Emily is literally tossing clothes into a crumply pile in her suitcase, saying, I'll be stopping when I'm relaxing on the beach in Hawaii tomorrow. It's going to be perfect. And as far as romance, the only date I want is one wrapped in bacon. So yeah, and I say leave the date behind and I'll take the bacon. Thank you.
Yeah, bacon wrapped dates. I've never had one, but it just doesn't sound right.
No. Like, let's also wrap a piece of bacon around a pile of raisins. No, thank you. Just not interested.
Oh, God, no. Uh-huh. Oh. You must be really bad if you get that in your stocking instead of coal. Raisin-wrapped
bacon-wrapped raisins.
Yes, thank you. I couldn't even say it. It wouldn't even come out of my mouth. My mind would not allow it. It's like, reject, reject, reject.
You're like, I will take the stuffed olives. Thank you.
All day long.
So Emily continues, so yeah, I'll be skipping the cute outfits. Suddenly she pauses when she hears someone greet Susan. Emily, panicked, asks, are you already at work? Susie casually says, yeah, it's 9. Emily freaks out. Shit, I'm late for work. Cover me? But use a better excuse than last time. Susie defends, hey, a surprising number of people get their arms stuck in vending machines. Emily scoffs. It's not a thing, and promptly slips off her chaise lounge onto the floor as she's trying to put on her nylons. Who wears fucking nylons anymore? I was like, nylons? What? What in the Hallmark hell?
I heard that somewhere. I heard that on Let's Go to Court today on their episode.
Oh, what?
They were talking about a true crime story where a woman got tied up with nylons, and then Brandy was like, no, pantyhose. Like, nylons is so, like, old school.
Pantyhose are nylons. So,
yeah. Pantyhose sounds just as old, if not older to me than nylons.
Pantyhose and nylons?
What else would you...
Same fucking thing.
What else would you call them? What's a more trendy name for them?
People don't wear them. I mean, like...
Stockings, maybe? Stockings?
Sure, but stockings are usually, like, a color. And they're more like of a knit texture.
Mm. And well, they used to call them stockings too, pantyhose.
Pantyhose and nylons are more like, they just give you that tan look. Oh, I know the difference.
Yes, they're sheer and they're god-awful and they're uncomfortable. And they would practically start a fire if you walk too fast quickly. And your thighs rub together.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ. I've gotten many a second-degree burn on my inner...
Oh.
Legs because of those things.
See, you've actually worn those. I haven't.
Oh, back in the day. Yeah, like the 90s. Uh-huh. It was the 90s. We called them nylons back then.
Oh.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Anywho, back to the story. Once Emily gets into work, her boss man, Daryl, calls her into his office. Not to chastise her for being late, but worse. To ask her to give up her Hawaii vacation to work.
Yay! No!
He tries buttering her up. You're my wonder kid, my Don Draper! Emily flatly responds, Don Draper is one of the most tragic fictional characters in television. Daryl smiles. Yeah, but he had a thing. You have a thing, and I need you to do that thing. Sprinkle some of that Emily magic on this. Emily's confused. What thing? Daryl gets a dreamy glint in his eye. That thing where you take a nothing and turn it into something? A shiny gold-plated something? He gestures towards some decorated poster boards on the table. Jerry doesn't have what you have. Emily looks at the poster boards. Oh, God, these are awful. Daryl agrees. Exactly. That's why we need you. Emily sticks her finger in her ears. No, I've got a vacation and sunshine. La, 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 la. I'm not listening. Daryl continues undeterred. Jerry is on his way out, and when he leaves, his big cushy office along with his international accounts will be available. Emily pauses. I like big. I like cush, and I definitely like international. Daryl continues. You spend the next 5 days in Fulton spinning the straw into gold, and your name will go on to the top of the list. Emily's eyes flare open. I'm sorry, did you say Fulton?
Ooh.
Oh, no, 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 no. Anywhere but there. Daryl holds his hands up to his ears. Do you hear that? It's the sound of big, cushy corner office door slamming shut.
Ooh.
He looks at her meaningfully, and Emily, pursing her lips and narrowing her eyes, grabs Jerry's inferior poster boards and starts getting to work while Daryl triumphantly calls after her, Mahalo! Good luck!
Don't mahalo me when you take my Hawaii vacation away from me.
How could you?
Yes.
That's what I would say. When Emily goes back to her desk, she lets Susie know that she's delaying Hawaii to spend several fun-filled days in Fulton. Susie balks at this. Fulton, like Fulton where Jamie's family lives? Emily grimaces. Yes, like the Fulton where you can't swing a candy cane without hitting a member of his extended family. Fulton. It seems a bit odd to go. Like, when I first saw this, I kind of had to rewind it to watch this part again because I was like, why Fulton? They're in Chicago. Chicago seems more of like a metropolitan hub, and she's going to Podunk Town, population cow, to do this, like,
seriously
thing.
The definitely population cow, because the population cow town is hiring them. That's why.
Yes.
Okay. Go to where the money is. Cha-ching.
Go to where the money is.
Yes. At the re-election headquarters of Governor Hayward's campaign, Jamie has just gotten off the phone with his mom, who is very excited that Jamie was coming home for Christmas, but was wondering if Emily was coming with him. Jamie's vague, saying, well, I don't know if she'll be able to make it. She travels so much. And then was called into a staff meeting, so had to go. At the staff meeting, Jamie is tapped to write the governor's Christmas address because her regular writer's speeches read like a tax audit. Exciting. Governor Hayward wants warm and accessible content. And since Jamie wrote that compelling newsletter about smoking and there be no ifs, ands, or, wait for it, buts about it.
Ba-dum-dum.
Tamara's eyes are filled with not laughter, actually, just sadness.
No. Every once in a while, the mention of cigarettes makes me feel like that girl in Notting Hill that's like, I gave up smoking, my most favorite thing. Every once in a while, I just want a cigarette, just one cigarette. It's been so long, but then I'll probably like quickly revert back to smoking a pack a day. I'm just kidding. I was never that bad, but still.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is better for your health and blood pressure.
And everything.
It's
better for everything.
Not to smoke.
Better for the environment, better for
yes.
You. That's why I just got that glazed look in my eyes because I'm like, oh, I remember that. That was fun. Yeah, I'm never doing that again. But still, it was fun.
Uh-huh.
It lasted and you were young and oblivious enough to do it.
Oh, good times. Good times.
Oh, youthful oblivion.
Youthful oblivion. And if you ever just want to feel what it's like, all you need to do is go to Vegas and bam, it's like you're smoking cigarettes there anyways.
Or New York right now, if I understand correctly, because their air quality is crap.
Oh, yeah. That sucks. I hate it when there's super crap air quality, particularly due to global warming, which we talked about in our last episode.
Let's not get into it. We talked about it enough last episode. My God. It has been 0 days since we talked about global warming on this podcast.
All right. Anyways, moving on. Jamie was obviously the natural choice. However, he is insecure and isn't sure he's up for the task. His boss assures him that she hired him because of his creativity and talent in writing. She asks him, why do you want to work in politics? He immediately answers, to affect change and inspire. She says, yes. And that's what you're getting to do here. I have faith in you. Now write a bang-up speech for Governor Hayward. Yeah, Jamie, you can do it. You can do it.
Governor Hayward, is that any relation to the Hayward on the East Bay?
Yes. No, actually not. Chicago, far, far away from.
Got it.
From.
Be fun, though, wouldn't it?
The San Francisco Bay Area. Yeah.
They're the Hayward families, founders of the town of Hayward in California.
Okay, I'm just going to share with you my alternative universe idea, which isn't the most efficient idea, but I still really like it. By going to Hayward in the East Bay of California, you can then travel to any Hayward you want to across the United States or maybe world. And it's just like a portal to different Haywards. And then, so... It's not the most
bang-up idea.
It's not the most efficient way to travel, but it's kind of interesting if you think about it.
You could go to Hayward, California, Hayward, Illinois, or to Governor Hayward. And what the hell would that look like if you could travel to Governor Hayward from the Hayward in California, Corinne? I'd like to know.
Yeah, she's like all tucked into bed, all cozy. You like pop up amongst the four poster. Just came from Hayward in California. How's it going?
I would be changing my name immediately. Immediately. I am not a tourist attraction. Get out.
Fine. You don't want me to visit you? Fine.
I'm just afraid where you might pop out of Hayward, Governor Hayward. You know, I've got so many like dark, dirty thoughts about where you'd be landing in Governor Hayward.
I'm just thinking like behind those like little room divider things or like into a suit of armor because that's really cool or, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, if this is your imagination and that's where you're taking it, let's go with that. That's good. That's good. The next day, Jamie takes the train home to Fulton and is relieved when he sees his sister, Becca, there to pick him up, as his mom didn't seem to be paying attention when he was telling her the time his train arrived. They hug, and Becca excitedly pulls away as she sees Emily walking towards him. Oh my goodness, Emily! I'm so glad you can make it. Emily embraces her confused, but things are moving fast as Becca continues. Jamie was being so dodgy, I thought for sure you had broken up and he hadn't told anyone. This is amazing. Becca grabs her suitcase and hurries out. I'm just going to load this into the car. Dad is double parked. Jamie hurries after his sis, hoping Emily won't notice, that she got wrangled into his family's Christmas. She asks him, what the fuck? And says, your sister thought we broke up and you didn't tell anyone, which feels a lot like we broke up and you didn't tell anyone. Jamie shuffles towards the exit, not making eye contact. Yeah, I noticed that. Weird. She follows him outside where they're immediately hugged by Jamie's dad, Tom, who grabs the rest of Emily's bags and slings her stuff into the trunk of the family car. She stands there dumbfounded as Jamie says, I can explain, just give me a chance. And before Emily knows what's happening, she's whisked away to Jamie's parents' house, where she is enthusiastically greeted by Becca's son, Scotty. He runs past Jamie towards her, exclaiming, Auntie Emily, I'm so glad you're here!
Aww.
And Emily automatically does a fancy pants handshake with him. Then Jamie's mom, Diane, sees Emily and is so excited. Emily, hi! Oh, you too, you wanted to surprise me! Emily states, it's a surprise, all right. As once again, her luggage starts getting whisked away while Jamie stammers, trying to unobtrusively get in a word with his family. Emily finally states loudly, I'm not staying! And mom and dad and sister, who all have luggage in their arms, fall silent and turn towards her. What? They ask. She stammers, I'm not staying for the tree decorating because I have a meeting in town. I was given a last-minute assignment before we left. Diane says, well, Tom's been baking all day. Maybe you could stay for a quick bite. Emily gives, yeah, sure, I could do that. And Diane excitedly states, I'm going to see if Grandma's awake because she's going to love seeing you.
So as the family gathers around the Balsam Hill TM tree to decorate it with Balsam Hill TM ornaments, and Diane hands out giant cookies to the family, Emily takes a bite and immediately puts it in a napkin, pulling Jamie into the empty kitchen. Jamie holds a cookie up to his mouth, about to take a bite, but Emily isn't playing. She slaps the cookie out of his hand, hissing, why is it that your family doesn't know we broke up.
Do you think she slapped the cookie out, or do you think she spit the cookie out because it was disgusting?
I kind of wondered that. But then Jamie was going to town on the cookie.
Yes. So... And everybody else, like, throughout the movie was kind of munching on cookies, like, yeah. No big deal. Like, was it a secret Balsam Hill TM family recipe cookie that just maybe it's an acquired taste that's not up to par with Emily's palate? I don't know.
I don't know. Although I have to say that I have eaten some things that I haven't cared for so much that my dad has made and been like, good, you know, and so it could be one of those instances.
Yeah, well. Or maybe she just doesn't like sugar cookies. Maybe. Uh-huh. I mean, like, you know, who doesn't like, I mean, yeah, not my favorite, but nobody doesn't not like sugar cookies.
I know. It's a pretty good bet, generally speaking. But, you know, what if that sugar cookie is actually a salt cookie instead, but nobody just says
I've done
anything.
That before. I've done that before accidentally, yeah. Ooh, I was baking with my mom and she got so mad. She thought that I did it on purpose.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like just hell bent and super tired. And yeah. I was like, I didn't even have the words to be like, I fucking made a mistake. Mom, stop yelling. I'm 7.
I know. I was like, you're not perfection, Tamara? At 7? Come on.
And salt and sugar look so different. How in the world could you possibly make that mistake?
Okay, see, if you look at them under a magnifying glass, you can see that they are very different shapes, all right?
Or you could just lick it. One tastes salty, one tastes sweet. Anyways, I just thought I'd ask in case there was something I missed in that little scene about her spitting out the cookie, but thank you for being on board with me and not understanding that, Corinne.
I totally went through the same thinking about the whole thing in my head and not really coming out with a clear answer. Otherwise, I would have put it in the script. Diane comes into the kitchen, interrupting the conversation, exclaiming, "Plates!" and leaves again. Once they're alone again, Jamie says, "Well, it's probably because I didn't tell them." Emily rolls her eyes. "Yes, I gathered that. When were you planning on telling them?" And Diane hustles in once more, exclaiming, "Hot chocolate!" grabbing some cups and asking Emily to grab the carafe of hot cocoa, interrupting their conversation. The family catches up in the living room. Diane is doing a series of paintings of cats, and Jamie's sister Becca is directing the school play that Becca's son Scotty is playing a tree in. Emily, Balsam Hill TM, Emily lets everyone know that her job in town is to help Fulton City's Planning Commission launch a campaign to attract new residents that is seasonally focused. It starts on Christmas. Always a good idea to, like, start a campaign, like, a week before it's supposed to actually launch.
But, I mean, that's the Hallmark way.
It is the Hallmark way.
It's Christmas Eve, and a lot of times they're like, we're going to decorate the house today.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or, now let's start planning the Christmas festival. And it's like,
Christmas festival.
Sure.
When's the Christmas festival? Oh, I don't know. It's only the Friday before Christmas. They'll let us know. They'll let us know eventually.
Yeah, and it's just like 5 days away. No big, like.
I'm going to guess on Christmas Day. Do you want to spend the holiday with your family? No, let's spend it in a courtyard looking at a tree get lit up.
No, you spend it with your family in a courtyard with a tree, looking at a tree getting lit up. Come on. Get with the program.
Okay. Well,
magical family moments.
Well, we will get to that. We will get to it.
Magical family moments.
I have things to say about the magical family moments in this movie, but continue, please.
Okay. So, Emily is doing the creative for this Getting People to Live in Fulton City Planning Commission job. The exciting thing is that Jackie Joyner Kersey is our spokesperson. And for those of you who weren't like into the Olympics in the 80s, she's an amazing track athlete. Everyone, including Jamie, is surprised and excited for that spokesperson news. Tom, Jamie's dad, is confused. "Jamie, I'm surprised that you didn't know about the spokesperson." Emily smiles stiffly. "He does, because I told him on the train, because my camera crew is coming tomorrow." And Jamie awkwardly pivots. Well, when she told me, I thought she said Jackie Joyner Percy. And I thought, wow, how odd that she's featuring the lady from the Fluffenfold and Clark. Now, a three-time Olympic gold medalist, that makes a whole lot more sense. Everybody in the living room nods in acknowledgement. Yes, that does make a whole lot more sense. Things seem like they're going pretty well until Diane mentions that Jamie and Emily may want to start talking about the future, particularly if they're interested in Tamara shaking her head, babies.
Oh, God. Oh, Lord.
Jamie, who was in the middle of taking a drink, sprays said drink from his mouth. And Emily says, well, on that note, I got a meeting I have to get to.
Let me just close my legs and take my ovaries right on out of here.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Are you talking about procreation on behalf of me? Because...
Yeah.
No.
Why don't we just get rid of this advent calendar and put up an ovulation calendar, shall we? Yeah.
You are so full of good ideas. Hey, maybe for Christmas, a thermometer like my mom sent me when I had COVID.
Oh, yes. Yes, 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 yes. That would be like the first day of the ovulation advent calendar. You get the thermometer. And then every day after that, like the second day, would probably be something equally not as fun, like prenatal vitamins. And then the third day, blah, 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 until you get to the day that you're actually ovulating. And then it'll be like chocolate covered egg or something.
For pregnancy tests.
Or baby Jesus. That's also fitting.
Yeah, that's true. I think we end on the baby Jesus. Yes.
Chocolate baby Jesus is on the day you ovulate. Mm-hmm.
That's a new kind of communion that I might be able to get behind.
God, that's, I just can't eat the body of Christ if it's in baby form and chocolate. I just can't.
You're the one who said chocolate baby Jesus, not me.
That was for an ovulation advent calendar. Very different things. Very different.
What you were talking about was classy, okay?
Yes, that was like, surprise, now you can have some sexy time. Here's the baby chocolate Jesus as a reward and for energy as you go at it with your bow. Emily rushes outside with Jamie following close behind with her luggage. He assures her, I'm going to tell them, she rolls her eyes. You've had 2.5 months. What were you thinking? Jamie explains, I know, I'm sorry. Granddad had just passed and I wanted this Christmas to be easy. If I had known you were going to be at the train station, believe me, I would have handled things differently. Emily sighs. I understand. Just tell them tonight. They go to the family car and Jamie gives Emily a ride into town, dropping her at her hotel. But Jamie isn't ready to go back home and face the music with his family, so he remains parked out front, said hotel, practicing what to say. We grew apart, different taste in movies, and she joined the witness protection program were options. But ultimately, he practiced the truth. Emily's career was taking off and mine was plummeting, and I was afraid it wasn't good enough for her. He rubs his eyes, feeling overwhelmed by the entire situation when his phone rings, temporarily breaking him out of his funk. It's Emily? The reservation was made under the wrong name and nobody was at work to change it, so she needs to spend one more night with his family because there's no room at the end, get it?
Oh!
There's no room at the inn.
Oh, chocolate baby Jesus.
Oh, the chocolate baby Jesus of it all. Jamie asks, do you still want me to come clean with my family? And Emily scoffs, oh, hell no. I don't want to be in the middle of that shitstorm when the truth is told. You've lasted this long, you could last one more night.
Mm-hmm.
Her luggage is once again tossed into the back of the family's car, and they head back home. Should make that a euphemism for something. Her luggage is once again tossed into the family car.
Oh.
Huh?
Is like
winky winky
luggage being tossed into the car on the ovulation advent calendar.
Uh-huh. Junk in the trunk on that special day.
Bow, beep beep. Jamie is nice enough to give Emily his childhood room to sleep in. There's even New Yorkers under the mattress in case she needs something to wink to. I mean, sleeping material. His room, which is about the size of my entire living room slash kitchen area, has a sitting area and it's bedecked in posters of hot, sexy ladies. Nah, the posters are of Shakespeare and Oscar Wilde. Because he knows how to have a good literary time. Oh, yeah. And before he heads down to the basement to sleep on the pullout couch, Emily threatens him. you better be up in the morning so I am not left alone with your family. He assures her he will. But when he goes downstairs to the basement and he feels how uncomfortable the pull-out mattress is, he pops a sleeping pill to help him sleep. And lo and behold, the next morning, Emily is left to fend for herself while Jamie is passed the fuck out.
Peace. You said pull out.
That is not on the ovulation advent calendar.
Oh, it is now. We're adding it. That's day 17.
Doesn't that defeat the purpose?
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I've known many a person that's gotten pregnant with the rhythm, aka pull-out method. So
that
maybe
is
it's like,
true. Yeah.
It could be like a
mix things up, tempting things.
Choose your own adventure.
Right.
Choose your own adventure square.
Nice.
December 17th
is
choose your own adventure. You can pull out or you cannot.
Oh.
Roll the dice. See where the chips fall.
See if there's a little chocolate baby Jesus under your Balsam Hill TM tree on Christmas Day.
Or in your ovulation advent TM calendar.
The ovulation advent TM calendar is not affiliated with Balsam Hill TM, not to be confused with an ODK original product.
Okay, bullshit. You know what, Balsam Hill? You're not good enough for my goddamn advent ovulation calendar, okay? Go fuck right off. I'm just kidding, Balsam Hill. I love you. And please sell my advent ovulation calendar.
And also, if you want to send us cute ornaments, by all means.
In the shape of chocolate baby Jesuses, that'd be great.
Oh, my. So Jamie is passed the fuck out. He's sleeping on the floor with his feet up on the mattress, clutching a giant teddy bear, completely oblivious to the chaos going on upstairs. I mean, we have a little bit of everything. Emily desperately trying to get downstairs to Jamie, but being waylaid by well-meaning family, breakfast burning, the Christmas tree falling, and Jamie's nephew declaring that, I've made up a new superhero, Super Santa! I'm like, Santa's pretty super to begin with, so good on you. I want to know how Santa's extra super.
Mm-hmm.
Inquiring minds want to know Jamie's nephew. But while Jamie's parents are simultaneously grilling, I mean chatting up Emily about what's been going on with her.
No, you mean grilling.
Yes. While they clean up Christmas tree collateral damage, Emily finally reaches her limit after they start basting her with some nice honey barbecue sauce. But really, she reaches her limit when they mentioned the diving trip she went on. And Emily is like, diving trip? No, I don't know how to dive. Diane follows up. Yeah, that's why you couldn't make Becca's birthday. And Emily is forced to say, oh yeah, that diving trip that she didn't go on. And since she didn't dive, she spent the time on the beach, diving into margaritas. Da-da-da-da-da-da-cha! She exclaims to Jamie's parents, what was the name of that resort? I'm going to have to wake up our little sleepyhead to see if he can jog my memory, fucker.
Next thing we know, Emily is dumping a glass of water on Jamie's head and shaking the bottle of sleeping pills in his face, exclaiming, guess what? It's 12 p.m. and your parents are asking me about a scuba diving trip I have absolutely no recollection of. Get up, get dressed, and meet me out front so we can do the yard thing, and then for the love of all that's good in the world, get me to my hotel so I can meet my camera crew and to my job. Everyone will be there in 2 hours. A bleary Jamie tries to pull himself together, assuring Emily that he will do all the things. And I'm just like, what is the yard thing that they're doing exactly? Because when she goes outside, it looks like she's helping to decorate the house. And if she's like, quote unquote, decorating, that's going to take longer than 2 hours. And why doing it 5 days before Christmas again?
She's just adding a little finishing touch, but it's the dad, you know, blowing up the inflatables in the yard.
Right. Because so the inflatables only get to come out the week of Christmas, not before, not after. It's a sacred time here at the Jamie's family house because they don't give a last name.
Just refer to the ovulation advent calendar, I mean.
So good.
Nothing says getting pregnant for the Lord like inflatables on your front porch.
That would be funny if you opened up like the little window on Advent calendar day 20 and you just hear and a little blow up ornament pops out.
Oh, so cute.
Anyways, apparently they're just adding to their already plentiful Christmas decorations. They start blowing up inflatables, as Corinne says, and before they grandly get completely full, Emily gets a work call, and she ducks away as Frosty Santa and many others slowly inflate. The call's from Jackie Joyner-Kersee. Unfortunately, due to a snowstorm, she's unable to come out there to film. And, to add insult to injury, neither can Emily's film crew. Ugh, they can't make it due to the weather as well. Jackie Joyner is very apologetic, but it doesn't change the fact that suddenly Emily, who thought everything was coming up roses in regards to work, now feels kind of fucked.
But I must say that Jackie Joyner-Kersee looks impeccable, good as she did in the 80s. I want to drink what she's drinking.
And you didn't write it in here, Corinne, but she has a little bit of a fucking shit. Not Jackie Joyner-Kersee. Emily has a little bit of a shit fit when she gets everything canceled on her and kind of does this crazy, like, kicky, like, tantrum in the porch, which was very entertaining to watch.
Aww.
I enjoyed it immensely.
I missed that, but I totally agree with you. I'm sure it was very entertaining to watch.
Mm-hmm. After her kicky tantrum, she goes into the house demoralized, much like the inflatable collection on Jamie's parents' lawns, after something went wrong with their inflatability-ness. Maybe the power supply went out, a la National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation? Jamie follows Emily into the kitchen and tries pep-talking her. Do it yourself. You can do your own promotional and formative commercial. You've got a camera, and I know my sister'd be happy to help you out as well. Emily says, I appreciate your encouragement, but I need a new spokesperson. Jamie paces back and forth for a moment. How about this? The governor could be your spokesperson. She looks at him dubiously. The governor? The governor of Illinois? Oh, yeah, sure, no problem getting that. Bring, bring. Hiya, governor. It's Jamie-O giving you the old ring-a-ding to see if you can help out the small town in Illinois. Jamie nervously says, I know, but it's not that far of a shot. I'm working for her now, and I'm writing her Christmas speech. And, gentle listeners, by writing her Christmas speech, he means typing the heading, Governor's Christmas Speech, into a document. So, he still has a way to go, but we have faith in him. Kinda.
Do we?
No, because it's like three shots where we've seen him in front of his computer, and he wrote, Christmas speech. Really important Christmas speech. Governor's Christmas speech. And that's about it.
You know, he's really good at just tossing around different headers, titles for the
He needs to make sure the font is correct because the font really, really makes those speeches.
It sets the tone. You know, you're a graphic designer.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I feel it. I feel it.
I mean, you just put some Helvetica down there and do you feel inspired?
No.
Come on.
Helvetica is the cornflakes of fonts, people.
Nothing Christmassy, nothing inspired about it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Emily mulls over Jamie's idea about the governor. Okay, that may work, but what's the catch? Jamie looks at her innocently. Catch? There's no catch. Okay, well, maybe there's a catch. You stay here for the next week with the family, and then we can break up once we get home from Christmas vacation. Emily looks at him with what the fuck eyes. Do you understand what a terrible idea that is? Jamie confirms, yes. Emily asks, and you still want to do it? Jamie remains steadfast, yes. Emily pauses a beat, and you can really get the governor. Jamie nods his head. Oh, yeah, super easy. She loves me. And by loves him, basically doesn't know who he is, with the exception that he can make bad puns about cigarette butts and that he's writing her Christmas address. So, super besties.
Oh, well, if he can't get the governor, you can always just send them to Hayward and then they can magically float on over to the governor. Hayward, California, that is.
It's perfect. It's perfect. Corinne's fantasy travel ideas. Oh,
TM, TM,
TM, TM, TM. So, with all that being said, Emily agrees, but she may be regretting it because in the next scene, the entire family is at the town's Christmas tree lighting festival. They're all dressed up in flashing Christmas vests, but fortunately, Emily has managed to avoid that. The fam participates in Christmas festivities, and Emily and Becca take pictures for Emily's job. After Jamie's family kicks off Christmas karaoke, singing, "Jolly old St. Nicholas, lean your ear this way," Jamie and Emily wander off exploring the fair. Emily remarks on how good Becca's photos are, and apparently, at one point in time, Becca wanted to be a photographer, but best laid plans have a way of still getting turned upside down at times. Don't I know that?
Oof. And didn't she specifically say, "I have to get the Fulton Christmas tree lighting"? Oh, and then they're going to light the Christmas tree. And 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Camera pans to all the people with looks on their face and no Christmas lighting to be seen.
You know, it was very reminiscent of
the Hallmark trope
of Unthinkably Good Things that we just yes. saw, where they're like, "Look at that library over there." And they're all yes. like, "Ooh, yeah."
Uh-huh.
But no library is seen. Yeah.
Yes. The Christmas tree lighting that she needs to get pictures of, we don't see it.
It's beautiful. I'm using my imagination. You're supposed to use your imagination. Christmas has no limits. It is the time of imagination and magic. Like magic Christmas trees that you don't even see because they're so magical.
That's right. Yes. Yes. That sounds like something a location manager with a low budget would say.
Apparently, Balsam Hill TM did not come through for the Christmas tree lighting festival. I don't think they make trees that big.
Or they didn't plug them enough. You know what? You only get 5 regular-sized Christmas trees for this one. You didn't say Balsam Hill. They contracted 72 times in order to get that mega tree.
Damn it!
It'd be like those fucking fundraisers in school. If you say Balsam Hill this many times, you get a pencil. If you say Balsam Hill this many times, you get a notebook. If you say Balsam Hill 72 times, you get a bicycle or a big tree. Whichever.
Everybody wants your choice. A bicycle. Except that it just, nobody gets the bicycle. So sad. So there's the mythical tree lighting. And then Emily and Jamie sit on a bench and reminisce about how they met at Susie's Broadway karaoke night. Jamie groans, "What was I doing there? I hate karaoke and I didn't even know anyone." Emily responds, "Yeah, but you ended up talking to me. You were so sweet, giving me your sweater, getting me a cab, and getting my number." Jamie slyly responds, "Well, I needed my sweater back. It was cashmere." Emily scoffs at this when suddenly a fucking piece of mistletoe is hanging in between them. Maybe that's part of the ovulation advent calendar kit.
Subtle, parents. Real subtle.
Jamie's very unsubtle. Parents are going around the Christmas tree lighting party with mistletoe on a fishing pole and hanging it over unsuspecting people, or at least over an unsuspecting Emily and Jamie.
Yeesh.
Ugh. Jamie and Emily kiss. It's like the kiss cam for Christmas tree lighting festivals. Yeah. It is. Suddenly you're beamed in the head by like a mistletoe.
You're not kissing. I said, bam, 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 bam. Just keep on dropping it over the couple over and over again.
Jamie and Emily kiss. And while they don't go to town, it's soft, sweet, and lovely. That was a nice Hallmark kiss. I have seen some horrible Hallmark kisses for people who were theoretically interested in each other. And those two who feel conflicted about each other gave a really nice kiss.
Yes, we've witnessed many of those bad Hallmark kisses together.
Oh, yes. And somehow it has brought us closer.
It's because we joined a bad Hallmark kiss support group and got to discuss them at length.
You too.
Worked through our feelings. Mm-hmm.
If you join the Patreon, can also be part of the bad Hallmark kiss support club.
In this one movie, the kiss was so bad that the camera had to pan away to the back of their head because we didn't want to see what was going on in the front.
No, the lip action was not. It's better just to see the back of the head moving. Yes.
Yes. Did she even have lips? I couldn't tell. You couldn't see them. They were so tight and hard. And no, normally that's a good thing, but in this case it was not.
No, no. Jamie gets pulled away by his nephew to show him something, and Emily is left sitting on the bench feeling regrets and wondering what the hell she got herself into.
An unexpected Christmas, that's what. Later, Jamie tries working on the speech, and nope, it's not working. The next day, he talks with his boss lady, trying to convince her to convince the governor to do her Christmas speech in his small town. But his boss lady, Gina, is dubious. However, Jamie has assured Emily that he has secured the governor. For sure, really, though, she's coming, uh-huh. And Emily uses the governor to resecure the job with the Fulton City Planning Commission, who initially weren't happy about losing Jackie Joyner-Kersee as their celebrity host. They were planning on using the phrase, "You can't beat her, so you should join her." Ba-dum-dum-tsh. Get it? Joyner, Jackie Joyner.
Ah!
Yeah.
So clever.
But finding out the governor will be touring their small town appeases them and has Emily back on the job. Later, Jamie's sitting at his sister/nephew's play rehearsal and Becca eyes him. "You're hiding something. This is about Emily, right?" Her sister's spidey senses are strong, but Jamie plays it off, saying, "The stress of the big gig is a lot right now." He moves over next to his sister, asking her how she's doing. She gestures back at the stage. "Not exactly how I thought I'd be using my film degree." He chuckles. "Yeah, but at least you're creating something. How's your love life?" Becca rolls her eyes. "Well, seeing as how I'm a single mom working part-time at an art gallery and living at home with my parents, with that kind of lady bait, it's a surprise I'm still single." "Although there was this one person, smart, cute, funny. We fell in love, even got married. But when I decided I wanted to adopt, she decided she wanted to move to L.A. Jamie says softly, "Permission to get real with you for a sec?" Becca sighs. "I prefer you didn't." But Jamie blunders on. "Great. So you are amazing and have so much to offer in a relationship. Have you thought about mixing it up a bit and moving up to Chicago? Shoot, I think Scotty would drive you up there." Becca chuckles. "Yes, my 10-year-old son won't be driving us anywhere, but I understand what you're saying. The thing is, as much as I complain about Mom and Dad, they're such a big help. And I'm not sure what my parenting life would look like without them. I'd be starting all over up there." Jamie assures her, "Just think about it." And then Scotty approaches in a very homemade-looking Christmas tree costume. He is forlorn, and Jamie covers his mouth to stop a laugh. "Mom, I look ridiculous," Becca admits. Is it the greatest costume? "No, but you look perfect." Jamie agrees, "Perfect." Becca continues, "No, it's not perfect, but you know, and I know, and Uncle Jamie knows." Jamie chimes in, "I know." Becca says, "You are extraordinary." And Jamie seconds us, "Yeah, and powerful." Becca agrees, "Yes, power and?" Scotty fills in the blank, "Unique." And Jamie fully agrees with this. "Yes, unique. That's the word."
I thought the costume that the tree costume was really cute that he was in.
It was cute. I wouldn't wear it, but it was super cute.
Oh, it's glorious felt construction. And he had the headband with the star on the top of it. Oh, glorious. Mm-hmm. Glorious, glorious, glorious. Later that evening, during a family game of charades, Becca lets slip that she's going to Hawaii in 5 days on Christmas. And the family is full of, "What the fuck?" But Jamie and Emily kind of stammer around it, basically saying, "What? Look over there. We love Christmas with the family." And assuaging their concerns. However, there is one person whose spidey senses have been...
Is that what spidey senses sound like?
Yes, like a creepy lullaby and goodnight nightmare chime. Yes.
Told you, you gotta switch that out with the ting 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 ting.
That's my phone saying, "Hey, it's time for you to like start chilling out and chillaxing before bed."
Oh, nothing says chillax and chill out like ching 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 ching. Just saying.
I tell you, it's way less creepy than ding ding ding. Like, it sounds like it's gonna be in a horror movie, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And suddenly you're looking at an antique doll rocking back and forth in a dusty room.
Ah! Let's keep it in spirit, an antique Santa porcelain.
No! there's one person whose spidey senses have been tingling all along, and when she gets a moment alone with her brother, she pulls him out into the backyard where Becca has her she shed. They enter the shed and Becca announces, "Turn on Becca's she shed," and twinkle lights and Christmas music springs on. Then she turns around staring intently at her brother and says, "Spill the beans." He explains that he broke up with Emily in October for reasons he'd rather not explain, fragile male ego, and he goes into the rest of it. Becca is impressed. "Wow, okay," she slaps him on the back of the head. "What is wrong with you?" Jamie sighs. "I know, but y'all love her so much, and Grandpa died, and I just wanted this holiday season to not be more of a bummer." Becca is confused. "All you've done for the past 2 years is talk about Emily. I thought you were going to be proposing to her." Jamie finally admits that he's insecure and broke up with her because she was rad and he didn't feel like he could live up to her radness, a.k.a. fragile male ego.
Mm-hmm.
Becca looks softly at Jamie. "I love you and support you, but you're wrong here. So if you don't end up marrying her, I will, because one way or another, we're keeping her in the family. Because Becca knows best."
Mm-hmm.
I like Becca.
Did you see in her she shed, she had snacks in a tackle box, like popcorn or something? She had a snackle box in her she shed. I want to marry Becca. I'll live in her she shed, eat her snackle box snacks, and be happy.
I see you with a nice snackle box. I can get behind that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've seen him elsewhere. That's what I was like, a snackle box in the wild. Oh, my God. I'm just kidding. I wouldn't marry Becca unless Larry could come with us.
I think you would make an excellent throuple. I'm just saying this all.
Yeah. Yeah. She sheds snackle boxes. It'd be perfect.
Yeah.
As we continue on our journey of A Christmas of Lies, Jamie's sitting at the kitchen table, working, hard air quotes, on his speech. Oh, let me regale you with what he's written so far. Governor's Christmas Day Address.
Wow.
That's it. Yeah. He's written so much since he initially titled his document on the train ride into town, which was Governor's Christmas Day Address. Maybe he added a period. We don't know.
Semicolon. Hmm? Definitely a semicolon.
Oh, semicolon. Yes. Semicolon. Makes perfect sense now. That's what it is. If he just put this semicolon there, the whole thing would just flow out of him.
It would write itself.
Are you listening, Jamie? Are you listening?
All you need is a semicolon.
Maybe that's what your dream was trying to tell you. Yeah. Emily comes into the kitchen. "Good morning. How's the speech going?" Jamie insists that it's going great. Super powerful. Nothing to see here. And he swiftly changes the topic, asking Emily what she's up to. She says, as she slings a purse over her shoulder, "I'm looking for some inspiration of my own. Going to head into town." Jamie's excited. "Oh, you should go see State Street and the Winter Gardens. But don't enter on Main. You should go through the park. But not on... You know what? I should probably go with you." Emily's suspicious. "Are you procrastinating?" And Christmas of Lies, Jamie insists. "No, the speech is practically writing itself. I just could use a break."
Uh-huh.
And they go to see all the Christmassy sights and eat all the Christmassy foods, like wieners. A really big wiener.
Betty White would be proud.
Oh my God, she would. She'd be like, "Where can I get one of those hot dogs?" Meanwhile, back at the house, Jamie's parents, Tom and Diane, talk about Jamie and how he's been awkward around Emily. Tom suddenly gets hit with the realization. "Oh my goodness, you remember when I was going to propose to you? It was like I was possessed by an alien." Tom and Diane get super excited because it's obvious, right? Super obvious that Jamie is going to propose to Emily on Christmas. Insert facepalm here. That's not on the advent ovulation calendar. Shit.
Jamie and Emily end their Christmas tour at Melody's Bar, at Jazz Bar, obviously named after Melody the Pod Dog. Thanks for that, Paul Campbell. They reminisce about the past, and Emily nostalgically recalls when they'd hang out, chatting till late into the night at this one bar that had great outdoor seating. Oh, yes, that's... You're singing my siren song there. Great outdoor seating. I love great outdoor seating.
There's nothing Corinne loves more than great outdoor... Wait, the one thing Corinne loves more than great outdoor seating is spreadsheets.
Mm-hmm. Nah, I'll take... Why do I have to choose? No, can't.
You know what? It's Christmas in August, Corinne. You can have both.
Yes.
Because we do not adhere to any rules at ODK during August when we are covering Christmas movies. You can have both. You can have it all.
Woohoo! I can travel to Governor Hayward through the portal of Hayward, California. Done.
And I can have my snackle box and my she shed.
Yes! Emily asked Jamie, whatever happened? Why'd we stop doing that? Jamie responds, well, you got promoted to creative director, started going out of town a lot, and it's kind of hard to have all-night soul-searching conversations at your favorite bar when the person you do that with is thousands of miles away. Just then, a server approaches their table, topping off their water, and offers to take a picture of them with Emily's camera. But Emily, who has had a bit to drink and is realizing that her ex may have been a bit bitter about her career growth, responds, oh no, we're not together. I mean, we used to be together, but the only reason why I'm here now is to pretend to be in a relationship with him so I can have the governor. Can you believe he broke up with me over the phone during work hours? Boy, that was a meeting I wish I hadn't walked out of. The server looks back and forth between the duo, a bit stunned, and as artfully as possible, backs away from that situation.
Later, Jamie and Emily are hanging out on the porch of Jamie's parents' house, in front of a very fancy fire pit, laughing and bonding. She pulls an ornament from the porch tree, and Jamie tells her how his grandpa made him and his sister make those ornaments every year. But they weren't good enough for the inside tree, so they were relegated to the outside, where hopefully the elements will have their way with them.
Is that you?
That was me, because the inside has the Balsam Hill beautiful ornaments, yes. And the outside has the handcrafted kids' ornaments. I forgot I wrote that. Good job, Tamara. Anyways, they obviously recovered from the super awkward incident at Melody's and trauma bonded over poorly thought of Christmas crafts like the ornaments. Jamie realizes that he's got to share something with Emily Stat, so they head back into town and end up at a fountain. Jamie fishes around in the fountain and grabs something, handing it to Emily. What's he handing to Emily? Was it another foot-long wiener?
Oh!
Like the one she ate in the town square? A poorly made ornament that looks like a child made it? The governor? Find out what he gives her with us after the break. And we're back. Before we went on break, Jamie had just handed Emily something nice and wet from the fountain they're standing in front of. Any guesses? Aside from the ones I gave you earlier.
Nice and wet. Is this part of the Advent ovulation calendar as well?
Oh my God. Yes. It's lube.
Yay!
No, it's not. Oh. Actually, Emily peers down at it and it's a rock with initials on it. Jamie explains that whenever a couple gets married in Fulton, they put their initials on a rock and put it in the fountain. He likes to think about how two separate initials are brought together on this one rock and about how the fountain is full of so many people's new beginnings. Emily's inspired. You know, something along those lines of thinking could work for my campaign about stories in Fulton? Jamie snaps his fingers. Ooh, what about Fulton? Your story starts here. They're both super stoked by the idea, and I'm hoping that this has inspired Jamie on his speech, and it's the hook Emily's been looking for her campaign. She hugs him. Thank you for everything. And getting the governor, that really saved me. Jamie hugs her back, but his Christmas of lies is a heavy crown to be wearing. Later, he calls his boss Emily, leaving her a message. Hey, have you had any more progress with getting the governor to do her address in Fulton? Huh? Have you?
It's really important.
If there's any way you could help me with this, I'd appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You know what your boss would appreciate as a thank you? A fucking speech, Jamie. How about that?
She has a banger opening. The governor's Christmas address.
What more do you really need? I ask you that.
That in a nice font. That's all.
Done.
That's all.
Done.
Oh, sorry.
Copperfield, here you come.
And a semicolon.
And a semicolon. That's right. The next day, while Emily and Jamie are doing some Christmas shopping for the people they got in their family's Christmas gift exchange, Jamie gets a call from Gina, who happily informs him, "You owe me big. The governor is in. She wants to kiss babies, the whole nine yards. So I'll be seeing you tomorrow. Pick me up from the train?" Damn, Jamie just got lucky because his Christmas of lies just got halved. As Jamie happily rejoins Emily, his sister drives by in her minivan, honking at them. She rolls down her window and says, "The musical director of the play just hurt himself, and he was in the play, so now I need a replacement." She eyes her brother. "What size are you?" And the next thing we know, we're at the theater and Becca is threatening Jamie that if he doesn't get into the costume, she'll tell Mom and Dad. He banters back, "I don't negotiate with terrorists," but quickly changes his story when Becca calls their mom saying, "Jamie has something he wants to tell you," shoving the phone in front of his face. And Jamie tells her that he's in the play. Ooh. Mom Diane is thrilled. After the phone call, Becca eyes Emily, stating, "I don't know why you're smiling. You're running the confetti cannon." And Emily says, "I don't think I'm qualified." And I have a vision of Tamara pushing Emily swiftly to the side, stating, "I've been preparing for this moment for my whole life. Give me the confetti cannon. No, wait. Give me all the confetti cannons."
As I rub my hands together. Because that's exactly what I would do. I'd be like, "Oh, hell yeah, you have to wear a costume and act in the play. I get to pull this lever and make confetti explode all over the place." Christmas miracles do happen.
You're like, "Just as long as I have my snackle box next to me, thank you."
And it is Christmas in August and I can have it all. I can have it all.
Have it all.
I can set the confetti cannon to blow out a bunch of tasty snacks, goddammit. I could do that if I wanted.
Everybody's like, kind of.
No. I wouldn't point it at the play. God, I'm a professional, if anything.
Okay.
I would point it at myself later on when nobody else is around for safety reasons.
Okay, good. You wouldn't want to waste the tasty snacks anyways. All for you.
Yes. And it'd be almost like those money boxes where you try to stand and grab as many dollars as you can. My snack cannon would just blow out the snacks and I'd just be standing there like trying to catch as many snacks as I could. Be like a game.
I picture they have little parachutes attached to them so that they don't hurt you as they fall.
That or different point values on the floor behind me. So see how many I can get into the 10-point circle or the 5-point circle or the 1-point circle.
Nice.
Yeah. I would have to have wrapped snacks, unfortunately, because those are the only ones I'd be able to eat after they fall on the floor.
Yeah.
Incidentally, this afternoon when I was talking to Larry, he called me on his way home and I was doing work and he was like, "What are you doing? What are you eating?" And I had a Jolly Rancher in my mouth because the people downstairs bring candy endlessly. And I tried to stick out my tongue so he could see it. And no sooner did I do that, it plopped down on the ground under my chair. And I was like, "I lost my vida, candy." And he was just lost it. He goes, "That's why I love you. You're such a dork." And I was like, wait, I have water. Maybe I can wash it off. It might still be salvageable. There were 17 different kinds of hair and stuff stuck to it. I was like, never mind. That is why my snacks for my snack cannon would be wrapped. Just saying.
With a cautionary tale. Little parachutes attached.
What's the word I'm looking for? Preposterous. That's just preposterous.
I'm sorry, a snack cannon isn't preposterous. You can't have not cute little parachutes attached to the plane.
If you have to tie parachutes to every single snack, that is time consuming.
This is a fantasy thing. This isn't just like, I mean, because if you have snacks pelting at you from a confetti cannon, they're going to hurt you. But
depends on what snacks.
Okay.
So if this is so quote unquote a dream, this is quote unquote a dream.
Like candy floss. Okay. Yeah. No.
Right. Okay. So we're agreeing. This is like our dream scenarios. Uh-huh. So you just get your dream self, the one that was yelling at me on Saturday night, to go ahead and wrap little parachutes all over the snacks. Then I will forgive you for the semicolon rant.
From our semicolon fallout. Dream, yes. Semicolon fallout.
There you go. We're in a dream scenario, so you get your dream self to come tie parachutes. Dream parachutes on my dream snacks. We'll be good. We'll be square.
And they'll be cute. Yes, I will do it.
Okay, great. Great, 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 great. Anywho, was it my turn?
Yes.
Yes, because we just went on a confetti cannon rant. Sorry. Yes. I didn't even
because I knew you'd be like, super into confetti cannon, and I was right.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have no interest in confetti cannons, and we did not just talk about it for 5 minutes. Anyways, the next day, Jamie asks Becca if he can borrow her car to pick up Gina from the train station. She quickly responds, "You don't know how to drive a stick." And Jamie smartly replies, "Well, can I borrow your car as a passenger while you drive it to pick up Gina?" Becky kindly obliges. Once they get to the station, she asks Jamie what Gina looks like so she can keep an eye out for her. And he responds, "Well, she's got two eyes and hair on her head. Super helpful, brah. Thanks." Becca realizes it's a lost cause getting any more useful information out of him until he spots Gina and approaches her, giving her a big hug. Gina and Becca look at each other and bam! There are some palpable heart eyes passing between the two. Gina seems interested by this, and Becca, in stark contrast, seems scared shitless by this. Later that evening, the family's all out to dinner with Gina. Party! Gina just happens to be sitting next to Becca. Winky, winky. And Becca talks up her brother, explaining, "Oh yeah, Jamie's closing out the entire show. He is the grand finale." Just then, a server stands at the end of the table saying, "Welcome to Mama Maroney's." The family turns towards the server, and Emily and Jamie freak the fuck out. It's the server from Melody's Jazz Bar the night before, the one Emily went full confessional on. The server turns to Jamie, who is coughing, and Emily, who is partially covering her face, and says, "You two look really familiar. Oh, wait, I know what it is. You were in the bar I work at the other night, and I was your server. You told me the craziest story." But he's interrupted by Jamie shaking the table and asking Emily to duck under the table with him real, real quick to fix the wobbly bits.
I got wobbly bits, but they can't be fixed like that.
I don't know. Just stick a couple of coasters on them and see what happens. Just like they did. But I had a little note in this section to say to the server, "Honey, if your patrons tell you a story about how they're trying to put one over on their family and then show up with a large group of people, read the room. Don't just air their lies around like the smell of marinara sauce. Don't you want a tip?"
Seriously.
Ugh, goodness.
I'm guessing he does not make a lot of money in tips.
I'm guessing not, because they told him this big secret and he was just like, "Holy shit, this is a lot of information and a whole lot to digest." And then he sees him with a bunch of people. You're the guys that told me that crazy story about your family. And your tip just got knocked from 18% to 12%, sir.
Uh-huh.
Although they did have a big group, so I'm sure it's like already included in the tab.
Yeah.
Like the party's over six or more, whatever, whatever.
And at this point, if I were Jamie, I'd be adding an extra 20 in there for Becca to give to him to stay away from the table.
Oh, well, let's find out if that happens, because that's pretty close to. And Emily joins him under the table and hisses, "What are you doing? We can't spend the entire dinner under the table." Jamie looks around. "I just need a little more time." Above the table, the server says, "I'll give you some time to look over the menu and come back." And as soon as he leaves, Jamie and Emily pop back up, throw their giant Italian food menus in front of their faces. Becca also throws up her menu, creating a wall of silence. At least that's what they're acting like it is. And hisses to her brother, "What's going on?" Jamie responds, "He knows. He knows." Becca is momentarily confused, and Emily clarifies, "Our server knows about us. He knows." Suddenly, Jamie gets an idea. "Okay, Becca, you have to help us out here. Take the order for the table and bring it over to our server and pay for it with your card." Becca rolls with her eyes. "With my card?" Jamie sighs. "I was hoping you wouldn't notice. Okay, fine. Here, I'll pay." He fishes out his credit card from his wallet, and Becca happily says behind her menu, "Thanks for the dinner, bro." Apparently, Jamie's plan works well, and ultimately, Becca and Gina end up leaving the restaurant still with their secrets. Oh, wait. No, Becca and Gina don't have the secret, or do they?
Secret love.
Becca and Gina end up leaving the restaurant together, amiably chatting with each other, and Emily and Jamie leave. Still with their secrets, as Jamie chastises her. "And what did we learn about oversharing with small town servers?" Emily chuckles. "Not to do it." They laugh happily together, and she leans into him as they walk. "I'm so happy we've been having this time together. It's the most fun I've had in a while." Jamie smiles softly and turns towards her. Hey, Emily, I'm sorry for how I handled things at the end of our relationship. It was really crappy. She looks at him softly. Thank you. I appreciate that. Before he starts postulating, sometimes I wonder. Emily asks, wonder what? But he interrupts himself, moving her around and pointing up toward the sky. Look, a shooting star. Oh, you need to make a wish. She closes her eyes, makes a wish as Jamie looks at her affectionately. When she opens her eyes, he tells her, I'll tell you mine if you tell me yours. But she's not budging. Oh, I'll tell you if it comes true. And she saucily walks off.
Ha! With a nice little hair flip.
Saucily!
The next morning, as parents Diana and Tom dance with each other in the kitchen, Jamie asks his sister what she's up to. Turns out she's got a date with Gina. The siblings look over at their parents, happily dancing, and Jamie says, I wouldn't mind that. Becca agrees, yeah, me too. And she heads off for her date. A bit later in the day, while Emily is off meeting with the camera crew, Jamie is in the study trying to write his stinking speech, but nothing is coming to him. His grandma enters the room and has a little chat with Jamie. She asks, how are things going with you? And Jamie confesses, I'm supposed to write this speech, the biggest speech of my career, and nothing is coming to me. Except for a title. You need the semicolon. Grandma smiles softly. You know, you remind me a lot of your grandfather. He always wanted everything perfect, but the thing he discovered later in life was that the good things in life, love, community, family, they're messy, flawed, full of mistakes and missteps. You need to enjoy the beauty in the mess. Regardless of whether or not you're a success, you don't have to prove yourself. We love you just the way you are. And so does she. Jamie sighs. I just hope the governor feels that way. Grandma raises an eyebrow. I'm not talking about the governor. Jamie smiles sadly. I know. Emily is going on a journey of her own. When she's meeting with the camera crew, her boss calls her and says, hey, forget about your Hawaiian vacation. How about you go to the Cayman Islands to work instead? She tells him she'll think about it, and when she talks with her work bestie, she's a little excited about it. But she's also kind of interested in Jamie and thinks there may be something there. Her work bestie tells her to be careful. Agreed. And at the family Christmas gift exchange that evening, Emily gives Grandma a handmade ornament as she found out that Grandpa always had the family create ornaments together every year. On the outside tree, hashtag not fit for Balsam Hill TM. Emily printed a picture of the family singing Christmas karaoke, put it in a small frame with a string at the top for hanging it. Emily says happily to the family, I've always wondered what it was like to be part of a big family for Christmas, and it's everything I had hoped. And I fucking glossed over this. I can't believe I did.
What?
Boss man calls you. You've already put off your Hawaii vacation by 5 days and says, hey, how about you not go on vacation and instead work? It may be you're working in the Cayman Islands, but you're still fucking working. I'm just saying.
He's dangling that promotion over her head hard. He's like, promotion, 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 cushy office, right? You want a cushy office? Because once she takes it, then she could be like, no, bitch, I'm not going to the Cayman Islands. I'm going to fucking Hawaii. Don't call me. My phone will be turned off.
Boundaries. I like it.
Mm. I also wonder in that little section if Grandma got that handmade ornament. It's like, oh, it's so touching, a handmade ornament like your grandfather. And deep inside her head, she's thinking, another one of these fucking things. I want Balsam Hill, only Balsam Hill. And they keep making these goddamn ornaments and giving them to me.
And we're running out of room on the porch tree.
Yes, and nobody takes them and they don't get ruined out there, so they just keep accumulating. That evening, we're at the Christmas pageant. Becca's son, Scotty, is dressed in all his tree glory. And that costume looks like it was made by a crafting hoarder, but still cute. Emily is standing backstage talking to some hunky guy with a camera, and we're not sure what's going on with Jamie. He's standing off to the side in his wings next to a sister dressed in something white. and his face is painted white. Mm. Perhaps a Christmas mime or the beginnings of a snowman costume? A very thin 11-year-old girl, Santa, holds center stage. Oh, cursed luck upon this eve! She throws her arms open wide, gliding across the stage. Oh, wicked storm, I cannot leave! And Becca assesses her brother, who seems distracted. He's looking at Emily and the hunk across the way and also seems to be frozen in terror. Becca thwacks him in the side. I get it. You're filled with regret for breaking things off with the woman of your dreams. And you can probably fix things with her, but not right now. Becca steps in front of him, trying to catch his eyes. I need you to focus. Get your head in the game. And remember, this is community theater, not Broadway. Now make me proud. Jamie's nods isn't very reassuring, and Becca leaves to get Scotty ready for his debut as a glorious Christmas tree. Jamie overhears hunky photographer say to Emily, well, if you need a photographer, 3 months in the Cayman sounds pretty amazing to me. And he walks off. Emily approaches Jamie, chuckling at his glorious white outfit, and he says vacantly to her, you think you can get yourself to the train station? I'm going to need some time with my family to explain everything.
Oof.
She's confused. She'd thought they might talk about things before moving forward, but there's no time to talk about it right now as Becca comes over, pulling a string on Jamie's costume, and suddenly it starts inflating. On stage, Santa says, who will guide the sleigh tonight? And there is a pause, a bit longer than there should be, when out from behind some trees in the backdrop comes Ty/Jamie in an inflatable white unicorn costume.
Yes.
Woodenly saying, I come on a mission from the stars up above to save Christmas for all with the power of... He pauses, and Scotty, who's standing next to him, whispers, love! And Jamie continues, love! As Santa thwacks a bag of presents into his chest. Santa hisses, fly! Fly! And Jamie Unicorn clops around the stage. Meanwhile, Becca knocks into Emily, who accidentally shoots off the confetti cannon directly into Jamie's face, and Jamie staggers around a bit with the bag of presents, eventually thunking him down next to Scotty the tree. Another confetti cannon randomly goes off, and there's silence in a very confused audience until Scotty improvs, spreading his arms wide. And Christmas was saved! The rainbow that had been hanging in the background of the stage is only hanging from one side and swaying back and forth, and the audience slow claps, ultimately falling into a full round of applause.
Triumph!
Was it though?
The play is over and Emily and Jamie talk on an empty stage. He's being a real peach. He accuses Emily of purposefully spraying him in the face with the confetti cannon and leaving for 3 months to the Cayman Islands. Emily is baffled. You don't know anything that's going on, and I feel like such a fool. I had feelings for you, and you broke things off with me, and then all this happens with your family, and I still had feelings for you, and I thought you might have feelings for me, but now you're acting like this, and I'm done. I'm through lying to your family. I'm getting a hotel room for the night. And she turns around, sweeping the curtain back to leave, and right behind the curtain is Jamie's very stunned family.
This is one of the best Hallmark reveals I've ever seen. When I like totally didn't expect it, and she's like going off on him. I'm like, yeah, yeah. And then she pulls the curtain aside. I'm like, oh, his family heard it. They heard the whole thing. And then I had to like backtrack, probably like Emily did. Like, what did I say? What did I say? What did I say? Okay, I'm good. All right. I'm leaving now to the hotel.
Jamie can take care of this mess.
Yeah, not my shit anymore, Jamie. Have fun.
Seriously. If you're going to act like a big baby, you're on your own.
And not the kind of baby that's chocolate in our Christmas population calendar.
ODKTM, thank you. Emily sadly walks past Jamie's very stunned family, leaving Jamie to deal with the collateral damage of his Christmas of lies, which is fully complete when his boss Gina asks him about the speech and he finally admits that he doesn't have one.
Mm-hmm. See, what had happened was I started writing it and then got to the title, and little did I know I didn't put a semicolon in there, so it's completely writer blocked out and I don't have one. Sorry.
Bye. Yeah. Emily leaves Jamie's family home and she apologizes profusely to everyone, but they aren't having it. Diane insists that regardless of what's going on with Jamie, Emily is family and they love her. Good mama! Meanwhile, Jamie sulks in Becca's she shed, drinking wine in the dark. Becca goes out there and stays out there long enough to tell Jamie to get his head out of his ass and that it's okay to make mistakes, but if he's not going to try so he can avoid heartache, he's going to be heartbroken anyway. She leaves him in the she shed, and ultimately he leaves, heading out to the front yard and looking at his family's house, festooned in lights with so many inflatable Christmas characters out front. His dad is out there, and Jamie says to him, "You did a great job with the lights, the whole thing." His dad basks in the twinkle lights of it all and says, "You know, I do this all for your mom. I don't care about this stuff, but she loves it." This prompts Jamie to ask, "How did you know that mom was the one?" And his dad says, "When we're not together, I feel like a part of me is missing." Late that night, Jamie is trying to do something with his speech when suddenly inspiration hits. Bing! And he starts smiling and clickety-clacking away.
All this talk about drinking made me realize that this is a very drink-heavy Hallmark movie. And also made me realize that back in the bar, did you see the Andrew Walker cameo?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. And 2022 Hallmark Christmas season, they had some really nice cameos throughout their Christmas movies. And this one was Andrew Walker. He's just all casual. Walker, party of two.
Yes, tells the maitre d', Walker, party of two. Then almost bumps into Ty Ty. And I was like, is he going to come try to steal the girl? No, he's only on the screen momentarily. It's just truly a cameo. I thought he was going to jump in and be like vying for Emily's love. Sadly, no. But
and Andrew Walker and Ty Ty are brother-in-laws.
Yes. I didn't know that, but I'm just saying yes. Because why else would he be in the picture? Back to current time. The next morning, Jamie wakes up to the family having already done most of the Christmas present opening without him. I understand they're mad, but damn, that's cold-hearted. Things are off, and while the family insists that they're not mad at Jamie,
they're fine.
No, everything's fine. Even though, we completely cut you out of Christmas morning, which everyone knows is the best part of Christmas. Not bitter at all. Scotty summarizes it perfectly when he says, "It's just with Aunt Emily gone, it feels like pieces of us are missing."
Aww.
Jamie agrees. His brain hamster, creaky, creaky. Squeaky, slowly working its way around the wheel when suddenly he gets an idea. "Everybody get your coats!" And just like that, the family is spurred into action. Next thing we know, everyone's in the family car and they go to where the governor is supposed to be making her speech. But she's not there. Her daughter had an asthma attack, so they had to stay home. Jamie apologizes for getting the speech so late to Gina, who is very, Corinne put in all capitals, very understanding about the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
He then asks her if she knows where Emily is, and she tells him that Emily's at the train station. So the family piles back into the car, and they go to the train station. At the train station, Emily's watching the governor's Christmas morning speech, and the governor gives Fulton a beautiful plug. And her speech, courtesy of Jamie, is a great one about family, love, and togetherness. As Jamie's family piles out of the car, rushing towards the train station, Becca runs into Gina and asks her, "What are you doing here?" Gina scoffs, "You think I'd miss this? Oh, hell no." And the family and Gina all pile into the train station to witness Jamie and Emily talk. Talk it out. Jamie approaches Emily, who, having been warmed by the governor's speech, greets him with a smile and a surprised, "Hi." Jamie immediately launches into an apology. "I'm so sorry. I've been living my life in fear, and I'm tired of it. I have this idea that things need to be perfect for me to be successful and happy, but the only thing I have to show for it is a heart that aches for you all the time. I never stopped loving you. I just don't think I believed in myself enough to fight for it, but I'm fighting for it now. I'm asking," Emily looks up at Jamie and tearfully says, "Asking what exactly?" Jamie answers, "Stay. I know you have a job in the Caymans." Emily interrupts him. "I turned it down." Jamie looks at her confused. "But that's not what I want." And Emily interrupts him again. "It's what I want. I want to put down roots and start to let people in. There's this guy I really like. I mean, he's a pain in the butt, but he's still someone who's very special to me. We work well together." He looks deeply into her eyes. "I'm so sorry." He gently tucks Emily's hair behind her ears and continues. "I'm so, so sorry that you had to see me as a unicorn." This causes Emily to burst into laughter, and they kiss, and it's a damn good kiss. Gina turns to Becca and says, "If you're looking for a date to the wedding..." Becca smiles softly. I'd like that. And we see the entire family watching Emily and Jamie approvingly. Sadly, they didn't burst into applause, but they did envelope Emily and Jamie into a big family hug, and it was so good that Gina roped herself into it, literally trying to wiggle her way into the family, too.
Aww.
Would that be the end? Normally it would be, but we have a little scene at the end where Emily and Jamie are at the same bar. Melody's having a drink. Their poor server's the same guy. He approaches their table as they chat obliviously to each other and realizes who they are. And as quickly as he can, backs away, backs away, backs away, backs away, backs away. Because he wants no part of their secret divulging, family gaslighting, table hiding shenanigans tonight. The end.
Yay! Very nice additions, Tam.
Thank you. And so, Corinne, first movie, Christmas in August. What do you give an unexpected Christmas?
I feel like we're starting off strong. I feel like this is a better than average Hallmark Christmas movie or Hallmark movie just period. And I'm going bold. I'm giving this one a 4 dry kiss. And I attribute this. It was co-written by Gregory Magoon and Paul Campbell, but that Paul Campbell flavor, it's the punniness, it's having Ty Ty as a fucking unicorn, and I may even add in, I'm not exactly sure of this, but the movie that he wrote, co-wrote with Kimberly Sustad, is like 2 weeks notice Christmas style. And this one had a Notting Hill moment at the end when everybody's piled into the car and they're going to like the little different, little mini Notting Hill moment. And obviously because Paul Campbell named Melody's Bar after Melody the Pod Dog, because we're so close, you know?
Right.
Yes.
It wasn't because of music melodies and it was a jazz bar. Oh, okay. Okay. No, it was Melody, your namesake bar, made an appearance on a Hallmark movie. Yay!
It's because Paul Campbell loves us. Come on.
We're you only called him the coochie cooler that one time on fucking social media. He called you out. We're like, coochie cooler?
What's that? We had
should have called the bar the coochie cooler. That would have been something. I'd be like, oh my God, he does. He loves us. He really loves us.
I think that he would need to go Lifetime to call it a coochie cooler, not Hallmark.
What if he did like a play on words? What could look like coochie but not be coochie? No, everything that rhymes with it's bad. Hoochie cooler when
poochie,
work.
Poochie pooler.
Moochie? No. No. Never mind. We'll workshop it.
Anywho, Bethany Joy Lenz and Tyler Hines were delightful with each other. She does like sardonic, kind of sarcastic, beautifully. She takes no shit. I am here for it. And I found it to be a delightful movie, and also it had a little queer representation in there. It was not diverse much at all, except for the adopted son.
The governor.
Oh, yeah, and the governor. But she had and also Jackie Joyner Kersee. But, like, they had relatively small roles.
And the boss.
Yeah. Gina, Ty Ty's boss, had a slightly larger role, and you know, so did Bethany Joy Lenz's boss, but they were all kind of like third tier sort of characters in the scheme of things. So
yeah, not integral parts.
Yes. Anyways, still everybody did a great job. Totally enjoyed it. Thanks, Paul Campbell, Ty Ty, and Bethany.
Yeah.
What about you, Tamara? How many dry kisses dost thou givest?
I was going to say 3 1/4 dry kisses until you said that he named the bar after Melody the Pod Dog. So I got to bump it to 4.
Oh, yeah.
Got to bump it to 4 for that.
Yeah.
It may be lies, but this movie was operating under a web of lies. So I'll just jump right in, lie to myself, and tell me that's what the bar was named after.
Obviously.
But as far as Hallmark movies, like, this was so fun.
Yeah.
I liked the characters. Tyler and Bethany Joy Lenz had great chemistry. They had great kisses. This movie was very drink heavy, which I appreciated because Tyler was drinking out of a bottle of wine in the she shed without any glasses. What? And when they were in Melody's bar, they were drinking brown liquor from tumblers. Oh my God. The scandal. The scandal. And then there was that whole ovulation advent calendar, which was really inappropriate for a Hallmark movie. But you know what? I'll let it pass. At least they're getting moving progressively towards like sex before marriage acceptance.
I know. I actually thought it was kind of progressive. Very impressed that Hallmark had something like as creative, too, as a ovulation advent calendar.
And if you believe that, we are just joking. Please don't go back and try to glean through the movie to find that little tidbit that we totally just made it up and peppered throughout. But anyways, this movie was a fun watch. Good chemistry. Great kisses. And I was thoroughly surprised by a inflatable unicorn costume and the reveal of the parents and the family behind the curtain when she just spilled out her guts. That was such a like moment. And I don't get a lot of those surprise moments in Hallmark movies. So I truly appreciated that. And the writing, Paul Campbell, mwah, on point. As usual, 4 dry kisses for me as well.
Yay! So, Tamara, what movie do we have coming up for our 100th episode during Christmas in August?
Well, it's going to be a doozy, so we decided to do it in 2 parts because we are doing the Christmas movie mammoth that is Love Actually.
Wow. And when we say doozy, we mean like this isn't we're trying to stretch like something that's one thing into to 2 different parts. This literally needs to be in 2 different parts. I am an hour into scripting the movie and we're on page 10. So, you know, it's
yeah, there's a lot going on. There's a lot. There is many parallel and intersecting storylines that are just it's like 5 different movies happening simultaneously in one Christmas movie.
And I have different storylines color-coded. And right now I have at minimum 7 different colors going on.
Oh, shit.
On the screen. So.
Oh, well, gosh, it's more robust than I even thought.
Good times. Good times. Yeah.
So that'll be episode 100 and 101.
Yes. Love Actually.
It's going to be called episode 100's Love Actually. Episode 101, Love Actually-er.
Yes! Love Actually-er. Definitely. Oh, my gosh. If you have anything you'd like to say about Christmas in August... An unexpected Christmas. Tie, Bethany Joy Lenz, Paul Campbell, or our upcoming 100th and 100th-er episode of, what's that fucking movie called again?
Love Actually.
Love Actually, thank you. You can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us via the social medias on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to your podcasts, we greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. We'll see you next time.
Mwah!
Chinga, chinga, chinga. Press. Record. Press. Press. Record.
I think this is going to be a fun one.